Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we explore the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma, and thanks for joining us. Rising crime in our country, which has involved citizens of neighboring countries, seems to be putting a strain on South Africa's relations with sister countries in the region. Coming to mind, the rape outrage that happened on the West Rand, blamed mainly on illegal foreign minors. Joining us now for our conversation is Clayson Munyela, Deputy Director General for Public Diplomacy in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation.
With immediate effect.
When people saw,
and I quote, "In 2 years' time, Eskom's problems will be a thing of the past. People won't even remember load shedding," unquote.
They put saliva on the paper.
I'm in charge. That's why these fools are running around here. I'm in charge.
And then they share that zone.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Order, Chairperson.
Point of order, ruling party by point of order.
Must step aside within 30 days.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
He has no brains whatsoever.
The deputy president was sabotaged again yesterday.
Well, sabotage, that can be
this determined. Is not a shit.
Can you please come in?
Welcome to the show, Clayson.
Thank you very much for having me on your platform. Much appreciated.
Yes. Now, this week, you responded to Mr. Nxumalo, the Eswatini government spokesperson, in terms that were particularly strong after he made the comments in relation to the Gadi murder. Why did you respond so strongly? You know, as lay people, we think, oh, no, diplomats usually use very soft language. You know, they never get angry. They never, you know, intervene like that. Why did you respond so strongly on behalf of our government?
In fact, we were very soft. We were very diplomatic. We could have used even stronger language. Because when somebody is speaking in his capacity as a representative of another government and you characterize South Africa in the manner that he did, which is factually incorrect, which is completely out of context and ignores geopolitics, but also historical relations between the two countries, but also effects on the ground that affect the topic in question that he was addressing. Here's the thing. There is no country in the world that is immune from crime, including the Kingdom of Eswatini. That's why every country has a criminal justice system. So when you say South Africa is infested with a cancer of crime from top to bottom, this top that you're referring to, is that the head of state? Is that government? And on what basis are you saying that? So we thought that in diplomatic terms, it's something that's not done. That's why we took a dim view and sought to get an explanation from the Swati government as to what does this mean. We met with them, by the way. You're the first people to hear this. We had a meeting with them this morning where we sought to get an explanation and made our views known that we strongly reject this characterization of South Africa. And they agree with us that that statement does not represent the views of the kingdom. So that's why we thought we needed to respond that way, because in diplomacy, you teach people how to treat you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so can we take it that on that front, the matter is resolved and closed?
Yeah, well, because now we know that that view is not a view shared by the government of the Kingdom of Eswatini. But also the context is that this is a neighboring country with whom we've got excellent relations with, which are historical. And that's why we were quite surprised and taken aback that somebody speaking on behalf of the kingdom could utter such utterances, such words, and characterize South Africa in the manner that he did, which we thought was very unfortunate, number one. But number two, it was an insult to the people of this country and to the government of this country. And that's why we needed to take it up through normal and proper diplomatic channels, which we did.
Mm-hmm. But in general, though, how would you characterize the state of our relations with our neighbors? And how much are we impacted by the influx of their citizens into our country?
Well, to answer the first question, we've got very good relations with neighbors in the region of SADC. The SADC region is historically a zone of peace and development. If you compare it with other regions in the continent, we haven't had some of the political challenges that other regions on our continent are dealing with. So historically, we've always maintained SADC as a zone of peace and development. And that also affects relations between countries in the region. And we've got excellent relations. I mean, the customs union is one example of how excellent the relations are, to the effect that they also filter into trade and economic ties. I mean, the region is one of our strongest trading partners, and I'm putting them all together as countries in the region. So that's the context. This matter of international migration, and there are pushing, or there are push factors that push people out of the countries in the region, and they look for a country that is, in their view, stable, but offers better economic opportunities and therefore a better life, and they view South Africa as that country. It's not only limited to economic migrants from our region, it's also other regions on the continent and from other regions in the world. In fact, if you look at the number of migrants that are living in South Africa, living and working in South Africa. So South Africa can be categorized as what we call a receiving country. So you've got sending countries. That's where these migrants come from. There are countries that offer a safe passage for those migrants to pass through to arrive at their final destination. In this case, that is South Africa, a receiving country. Now, here's the reality. There is a huge pressure on the resources of this country because you have to take care of your own citizens, and now you've got this big number of foreign nationals who are descending on your country looking for better opportunities. That means you have to take care of them when they are sick, and you have to accommodate them in your schools, and they share the limited resources with your own nationals. So it is not an easy issue to manage, and that's why in the context of the high poverty levels that we are still confronted with in this country, you see the sort of sentiments on social media from some of our nationals complaining about, you know, economic opportunities, job opportunities, etc., etc. So the matter of the international migration is not always negative in terms of its impact, because a country can benefit if you attract skilled foreign nationals who enter your country legally and get documented and contribute to the growth of your economy by bringing in much needed skills. What we have a challenge with in South Africa, however, is the phenomenon or phenomena of undocumented foreign nationals who are here and we don't have them on our database, on our books. So if any of them commits a crime, it becomes difficult, if not impossible, to trace them and arrest them and subject them to the courts of our country for justice to prevail. So that's the biggest problem that we have, and you can trace that to how our borders are being managed, etc., etc. But the positive thing there is that Home Affairs has now introduced the new border management authority, and we're hoping that will assist in terms of managing what is currently a very difficult issue of cross-borders.
But apart from the economic tensions, you know, that arise as a result of the influx of foreigners, there is also the national security question.
No, indeed. That's not a small issue, by the way. If you look at the groups of foreign nationals who are here, who have grouped themselves into wherever they come from, some of them heavily armed, you know, carrying guns that South Africans don't even have. The question you are raising then becomes even more serious. I do know that the security agencies in our country are quite alive to this threat are handling that matter through their processes. So we're quite aware. It's something that is firmly on our radar. And you're quite correct. It becomes a national security risk, and it's not a small issue.
In terms of because, you know, clearly South Africa would like to keep good relations with all the neighbors. Are we engaging with the neighbors as to how to manage the challenge, you know, of the migration of people across, you know, back and forth across our borders, you know, in both directions?
Yes. No, look, I mean, the one thing we must say is that we mustn't be misinterpreted to say or to mean that foreign nationals are not welcome in South Africa. They are certainly welcome. What we are asking for is for people to enter this country legally. We want them to be documented. We want to know where they are and what contribution they are making. If they're looking for better economic opportunities, it means they should bring skills, ideally skills that we don't have in this country, in line with the list that is published by Home Affairs of critical skills that are required by the South African economy. Secondly, to say that, yes, we are engaging countries in the region. As I said, this is not limited to just countries in our region. You've got foreign nationals who come from other regions on the continent and other regions in the world. If you look at how Lesotho has reacted to the incident in Krugersdorp, where some of their nationals are alleged to be behind that horrific crime of young women being raped, there is an apology that has come through from the Prime Minister of Lesotho to our President. I saw it being reported in the media. In fact, it's already out there. That tells you that countries in the region do understand the challenge, the pressure that is brought upon South Africa in terms of accommodating this huge number of foreign nationals who are in South Africa, particularly the ones who are undocumented. And as I say, when they do commit crime, then it becomes difficult to manage. So that apology alone tells you that countries in the region are not oblivious to the kind of challenges that South Africa is confronted with, brought about by this phenomenon of foreign nationals who are in South Africa. And unfortunately, most of them undocumented.
Let's go broader, you know, in terms of our relationship with the rest of the continent, you know, beyond our own region, and talk about the African Union. There was a time where, you know, it was said that South Africa was one of the leading countries, you know, countries on the African continent were providing leadership in the African Union. How would you characterize our role in the African Union at the moment?
You know, the issue that we're discussing of huge numbers of foreign nationals coming to South Africa to look for better economic opportunities, that alone tells you that South Africa still occupies a leadership position in terms of the continent, because we still remain the most industrialized country on the African continent, certainly the most dynamic economy, diverse, dynamic, and offers better opportunities than most countries on the continent. So that position has not been, we still occupy that position, I would argue, quite strongly. When we chaired the African Union 2 years ago, some of the programs that we came up with gave testimony to the fact that South Africa is still regarded as a leader on the African continent. Despite the many challenges that we are confronted with, South Africa is still a country that is sought after in terms of providing leadership, not just on the African continent, but in global affairs. I mean, we are still the only African country that is a full member of the G20. And the G20 is the group of the world's most developed economies. We are still the only African country that is a member of BRICS, which is a very influential grouping in terms of geopolitics. Each time the BRICS leaders meet, the world sits back and takes notice and wants to know what the BRICS leaders are saying on topical foreign policy matters. So I mean, the G7, whenever it meets, they never meet without inviting South Africa, despite the fact that we are not a member of the G7, because they want South Africa's input in terms of decisions that they would have to make particularly to accommodate the views of developing countries. So when we speak, we carry the aspirations of the SADC region, of the African continent, and broadly of the developing world.
Mm. What would you say are the big issues, not all of them, but some of the key issues that the continent and the African Union are confronted with today?
Look, I mean, this continent is largely still grappling with the issue of poverty and underdevelopment. That then tells you that you've got huge levels of unemployment, particularly amongst young people. And you see that being expressed quite visibly in South Africa itself. We've got a lot of young people, even graduates who are sitting at home. That's the same picture that you would find in many of the African countries. So for me, those would be three of the main issues that this continent is still grappling with and needs to find answers very fast to. Africa is a young continent in terms of its population. Over 60%, I'm told, of the population, of the over 1 billion people on this continent, are young people. And if they're unemployed, that tells you you've got a big problem. That, for me, that would be one of the biggest challenges that the leadership of the continent has to address and find solutions to quite fast if this continent is to continue to develop and grow and catch up with the rest of the world in terms of developments.
Mm. Just to talk about BRICS, we don't seem to talk much about it in the public discourse in South Africa. I think a lot of South Africans by now would even have forgotten or would be totally unaware that we're members of the BRICS group of countries. Why is that?
Yeah, well, I wonder because the BRICS leaders meet every year. There is a summit every year. And in fact, South Africa is taking over the chairship of BRICS at the end of this year. So 2023, next year, we are going to be chairing BRICS, which means we are going to be hosting in South Africa the BRICS summit. So you'll have the president of China, the president of Russia, the prime minister of India, the president of Brazil here, being hosted by President Ramaphosa. The BRICS is quite an influential grouping in terms of geopolitics, more so because it's not just a club. It has actually grown and established institutions that run and support the work that these five countries are doing in terms of the multilateral space and influencing what happens in the world. Just take, for example, the BRICS New Development Bank. That bank is, if you look at the number of infrastructure projects that it funds and supports, not just in the BRICS member states, but globally, it tells you the focus was on projects in the five countries, in South Africa and in the four other countries. And then extend that influence in terms of the work that is done by the BRICS Business Council. So South Africa has a chapter of its own, and then all the other countries have chapters. And then you've got the broader BRICS Business Council, where business people from all these five countries meet annually to exchange ideas and explore opportunities in each other's countries. So the influence of BRICS is huge. So I would be surprised if South Africans don't by now appreciate how strategic it is that South Africa is a member of BRICS, that we count China, which is the second biggest economy in the world, as a friend and as a strategic partner that we meet with annually on a number of levels, including as core members of BRICS.
Which takes us to the question of Ukraine, because we have got one of the partner countries in BRICS being in conflict with much of the NATO group of countries, as well as with the United States. Has that put pressure on our position? In other words, have we come under a lot of pressure to take sides, and what is our position?
One of the positive things about working for a country like South Africa is that we've got an independent foreign policy that we defend fiercely. We defend our independence fiercely. We cannot be dictated to by anybody in terms of how to conduct our foreign policy. So even if you are a friend, when we disagree with you on the basis of what our constitution says, what our values and principles say, we will tell you that you are a friend, but we don't agree with you on this one for these reasons. On the matter of the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, we've been from day one advocating for peace, because in a situation where there is fighting, there is loss of life, there is destruction of property and infrastructure, the most powerful call you can make is to call for peace. So we've advocated for diplomacy to be given a chance, for negotiations, for meaningful dialogue, because a peaceful resolution of conflicts is what produces a durable solution that can be owned and defended by all, particularly the protagonists. So that's what we've been calling for. Those are the conversations we're having with Russia, which is a strategic friend and partner, and they appreciate and understand our call. There was pressure, of course, from the other side that we needed to support what they were calling for, sanctions and all of. We don't think those things assist when you've got a conflict of this nature. We think what produces a solution. At the end of the day, even now, what is going to resolve that crisis or that conflict is negotiations. It's for people to sit around the table and agree and peacefully resolve that crisis. Fighting does not do that.
And just lastly, in terms of just to go back to the question of the African Union, are you finding it? Are you finding that we are able to make progress in promoting the actions of the continent in concert? In other words, to get African countries to act in concert on multilateral platforms, you know, like the UN, for example.
Yeah. So we try and do that. So at the UN, you would have the Africa group that meets regularly whenever there's an issue on the table at the UN platform. We would meet as the Africa group to share ideas, compare notes, and seek to have a common African position that we can then advance, which is in the interest of individual members of the AU, but also broadly as a continent. That's what we do. You must know that in diplomacy, what countries always strive for, or what motivates them, or the objective that they're trying to achieve, is based or informed by their national interest. So we would push the national interest of South Africa, which would be in line with what is good for our region, SADC, which would be in line with what is good for the African continent. That's why the Africa group then would meet regularly to compare notes and seek to push a common position. We've been successful in many cases. Of course, there are times when the views are not necessarily the same. In those cases, then you try and convince one another until you reach a consensus, and then you move like that.
Okay. Tlaisin Munyela, Deputy Director General for Public Diplomacy in the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, we thank you very much for your time. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.